Welcome to Health Styles. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program that is brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College. New York City is a graying city in a graying nation, with a dramatic increase in the number of people age 65 or older. But there is a particularly vulnerable subpopulation of concern. Almost half of all older people in New York City are foreign-born, compared with 12% for the nation. What are the implications of this for a city that is trying to create an aging-friendly environment and a healthier population? And what are the implications for the nation? Elizabeth Siegert is a journalist and senior fellow with the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College. She interviews Christian Gonzalez-Rivera from the Center for an Urban Future about these issues and a new report he authored entitled The New Face of New York's Seniors.
Almost half of the seniors in New York City are immigrants. By 2030, experts project a 35% increase in residents 65 and older, from approximately 998,000 today to 1.3 million. Although city leaders have embraced several proactive aging initiatives, a recent report from the Center for an Urban Future questions whether enough is being done to prepare for the unique needs, especially in healthcare, of this diverse and burgeoning population. I spoke with report author Christian Gonzalez-Rivera about the findings and asked what the city can do to better address the needs of this especially vulnerable subset of the city's senior residents.
The main reason why we did this report is because while we hear all the time that, you know, there are 10,000 baby boomers turning 65 every day ever since 2006, we hear about, you know, what's going to happen when a lot of the people who are currently, you know, 10 years out of retirement, once they retire, are we gonna have a huge skills gap to fill? We hear a lot about that, but we don't hear a lot about immigrants. And really, I mean, it's like one of the statistics that really, it's one of the first ones that we found and one that really sort of grabbed us was that while 12% of all of the people over the age of 65 in the nation are foreign-born, in New York City that number is 46%. So really, when you're talking about the elderly, or you're talking about older people in New York City, you're really talking about immigrants. Yet the question becomes, are immigrants getting access to the services that we have available for older people in the city?
Well, this almost seems like a continuing story from the earliest days of New York. It's always been a city of immigrants. What's happened to all the services that used to be there?
Yeah, and the services have always been there. I mean, it's like, of course, I mean, a lot of them are funded by the Older Americans Act. But the big issue is that, you know, between 2000 and 2010, the population of older immigrants has increased 30%, while the native-born population has declined by 9%. So, you know, immigration's been a story since the beginning of New York, but then, of course, with the Immigration Act in the 1960s, the composition of immigration changed significantly. You had less people coming in from Europe and sort of, you know, traditional sending countries, and you had more people coming in from Asia and Latin America. And this is something that really sped up after 1990, and especially after the year 2000. So what we're really seeing is not only an increase in immigration, but we're also seeing a change in the composition of the immigrants that come here and that choose to settle here in New York City.
Yeah, one of the things that popped out at me was the difficulty. It's not only the language. Because of the change in where they're coming from, the cultural barriers are more significant.
Yes, this is true. I mean, language is only part of the issue. I mean, it's like translation services are extremely important, and that's, you know, a crucial part of what we need to do in order to effectively serve immigrant seniors. But also, you know, especially when it comes to healthcare, you know, healthcare providers need to understand that, you know, diagnoses and treatments are received differently by different cultures. For instance, I mean, one anecdote that I heard from several of the people that I interviewed for the report was that mental health is especially a sensitive topic among many Asian cultures, where, you know, there's traditional deference for elders, and so mental health is, I mean, for example, a diagnosis of dementia is something that is much more likely to be hidden rather than the family sort of actively seeking care. So this becomes a serious issue when, you know, perhaps the family wouldn't feel that, I mean, basically, I mean, it's like the doctors and other healthcare providers need to ensure that not only are they making sure that the diagnosis is translated language-wise to the family, but also that their options are delivered in a culturally sensitive manner, that doctors are really listening to the needs of the family, their family's reactions to this news, because it's really essential to ensure that not only does the family know what the diagnosis is, but that they're aware of what their choices are, and that they're comfortable, you know, taking those steps and making those choices.
Despite small living spaces, several generations often share a one- or two-bedroom apartment.
And one of the other things you brought up was also the issue of long-term care, which is a huge issue for any older American, but especially for the immigrant population and in New York, where services are so expensive and it's such a premium. How are cultures dealing with this issue?
Yes, I mean, immigrant seniors are much, much more likely to live in multi-generational households than native-born. I mean, for example, another figure that really struck out for us was that 74% of older immigrants, older grandparents in the city live with their grandkids, compared to, I think it was 23% of native-born. So that shows a huge difference. I mean, immigrant seniors really are living with their families. And so when it comes to long-term care, I mean, you know, there's a lot of older seniors that sort of aged in place here. I mean, I think they've been here since they were younger, they've worked all their lives here, and now they're growing old in their adopted home. But there's also a lot of seniors who are brought over from their home countries to take care of their grandkids. Because very often you have, you know, families, you know, both parents are working. I mean, you know, of course, these are struggles that are, you know, that are common also to native-born people, but both parents are working. Perhaps they're lower income. Childcare would be a huge burden for them. Mm-hmm. The cost of childcare would be a huge burden for them. So they bring over their parents to take care of their grandchildren while they're at work. Now, you know, while the senior is still healthy and active, you know, this is fine. But then the trouble becomes: what if the senior grows ill here? And they don't have access to Medicare, they don't have access to other services that are available to people who have been here longer, or who have worked the requisite 40 quarters or 10 mm-hmm. years here. So, you know, right now the struggle with aging in place is that if you're poor, you have fewer choices, you know, like with everything.
Right.
So, you know, while people with more money can choose to hire caretakers or move to a retirement village, an assisted care facility, et cetera, if you don't have money to pay for that level of care, your only choice may be a nursing home. And, you know, as you mentioned, you know, nursing home care in New York can cost upwards of $120,000 a year per senior, and that often gets picked up by Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a situation where Medicaid is willing to pay for nursing home care, but they're not willing to pay for, you know, the community health supports that would be far cheaper. And then, of course, have the added benefit of allowing seniors to age in their own communities, among their friends and families, among doctors who speak their language and understand their culture, among the services they need. Right now, I mean, something that I found out in the course of this research was that the senior housing policy world is working right now to put together some demonstration projects that show that ensuring that seniors have access to stable housing with community supports, including health supports, will save the public health system money, and that you know, supporting those community health services and supporting stable housing is a much better use of Medicaid dollars than just pushing a senior into a nursing home if they can't afford anything else.
In some cultures, the wife or daughter is traditionally the primary caretaker of her family's older adults. Social taboos about getting outside support often mean women can be overwhelmed with responsibilities, especially if they're also raising young children.
And of course, I mean, on top of that, you know, there are traditional families that find, you know, the very notion of putting their older relatives into a nursing home just completely abhorrent. So, I spoke to a social service organization in Brooklyn that works with Muslim people. I mean, it's from youth to seniors.
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying that often you have a situation where there's a huge amount of pressure on the women in the family, especially the wives in the family, because very often not only are they taking care of their own children, but they're maybe taking care of one or two sets of parents, both her parents and her husband's parents. And because the family will not seek care from outside, there's an enormous amount of pressure being placed on the wife, in this case, in the family, to provide care for everyone. Even in cases where the senior might be very ill, and it really sort of stretches her ability to be able to provide that care. But we really need to make sure that healthcare providers and social services agencies are available to really reach out to these people and say, it's okay to put a senior in long-term care. It's okay to ensure that they have the services that they need, because the alternative is much worse.
Right, but I would imagine breaking down those cultural barriers is an incredible challenge.
It's an incredible challenge, and of course the first step is making sure that the resources are there for people within the community who speak the language, who understand the culture, are the ones that are doing this kind of outreach.
According to the report, many of the city's existing resources and services aren't keeping up with the rising demand and changing geography. Because of language and cultural barriers, foreign-born seniors have a harder time finding out about existing support services. However, there are some community-based social service agencies that have done a good job of adapting as the local population has changed.
And when, you know, of course, you know, as you know, I mean, a lot of the dollars for this, you know, come from the Older Americans Act and get funneled through the Department for the Aging. However, in the Older Americans Act and in the RFPs that come from the Department for the Aging, according to many of the ethnic senior services agencies, organizations that I talk to, there's not a lot of language in there about ensuring that the care is linguistically and culturally competent. You know, there are examples of organizations that were funded. For example, there's an organization called Self-Help. That was funded after, I think it was after World War II or maybe a little earlier, to serve victims of the Holocaust and victims of Nazi persecution. So it was basically a Jewish-run organization for Jewish people, mostly. And in many of the communities where their senior centers are located, like Flushing, Elmhurst, Bensonhurst, mm-hmm. And Sunset Park, the community around them has changed radically. So there's, I think I used the example in the report of the Benjamin Rosenthal Center, that again it was founded a long time ago to serve Jewish seniors, but now their clientele is 100% Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
So they hired all Chinese staff to make sure that that these Chinese seniors are being well served. So it's not only, you know, making sure that there are new organizations coming in and that they have the capacity to be able to provide the services, but also making sure that existing organizations are also aware of their need to sort of change and sort of adapt to the new reality of seniors.
That's a very good point. One of the other things that struck me was this huge migration, particularly to Queens and also to Brooklyn. While those boroughs have gained, Manhattan senior population has actually dropped a little bit. What do you attribute the migration to the boroughs to?
Access to services. I mean, this is something that, you know, we heard over and over again that, I mean, there are stories of seniors apparently who live on Staten Island, Korean seniors in particular, because I mean, they heard this from a Korean senior service provider. Korean seniors who live on Staten Island who will take the ferry and the subway all the way to Flushing so that they can go to a senior center where Korean is spoken. So people are going to where the services are. And that means sometimes that, you know, new immigrant communities like Flushing are actually gaining people because that's where the services are also moving to.
It's pretty crowded as it is. Is there a capacity for some of these neighborhoods to even absorb this population?
Well, through choice or lack of choice, they are. That's what's going on. It's New York. I mean, as you know, New York is constantly changing. Neighborhoods are constantly experiencing ethnic turnover. Right. One of the things that I noticed through looking at demographics is that Jamaica, Queens, which has traditionally been a middle-class African-American community, is now seeing an enormous influx in East and South Asians coming in and buying up those homes. And in the meantime, you have the African-American community that's moving out to Nassau County, just crossing the border into Nassau County, and their population is growing there. So, you know, and a lot of those people are coming from Jackson Heights, and they're coming from Flushing. Maybe perhaps they were renting in those neighborhoods, and they decided to buy in Jamaica. So, it's the population is growing. The population is growing, and it's going to, of course, exceed the boundaries of existing communities. Yeah, it's been checked a bit by, you know, sort of rising property values there. So, it's something to be aware of.
I saw the stats you had on the median income, and that's a huge gap between native-born and immigrant populations.
It's true. It's true. I mean, it's like there's a huge gap, and often that's because of a lack of benefits. You know, I mean, it's like very often immigrants haven't been working here as long as native-born people, so their Social Security checks, when it comes to time to retire, are going to be smaller. And especially, I mean, it's especially dramatic in the case of Mexican seniors. A lot of them are supplementing small or non-existent Social Security checks with working. So you still have immigrant seniors, and especially Mexicans who are working into older age, to make sure that they can make ends meet, or they can, you know, bring back some money to the family. You also have a lot of, again, these are also anecdotes as well, but you can see it on the streets. You have a lot of Asian seniors who collect cans from public garbage cans. Again, I mean, it's like to make ends meet, to bring some money back to the family.
How does the U.S. and certainly how does New York compare to some of the other cities in the country? And how do you know how the U.S. compares to some of the European countries when we talk about long-term care and services for seniors?
That's something. It's something I didn't cover in the report. I mean, I can't speak, you know, sort
right.
of comprehensively
okay.
on that. So that's not something we cover. However, I mean, New York does have the benefit of having taken up the World Health Organization's challenge of by starting an age-friendly initiative. The World Health Organization some years ago put together a blueprint for how cities around the world can become more age-friendly, and that's something that ranges from sort of simple things like making sure that every intersection has a curb cut, you know, so that wheelchairs, you know, people with wheelchairs and walkers can sort of get up on the curb, to making sure that there's, you know, senior centers and that there's a variety of services available for seniors. And New York City has taken up that challenge and is making strides towards, you know, so it's sort of being a lot more senior aware in the city.
Gonzalez says funding for senior services has not kept pace with the needs of a growing senior population. Although New York City has a more comprehensive services network for immigrant seniors than any other city in the country, budget constraints and a lack of culturally sensitive aging policies make it difficult to meet the changing needs of a diverse and rapidly aging constituency.
What a lot of leaders in the immigrant senior services community were telling me is that while it's a great first step that the city has taken on this age-friendly initiative, there isn't enough language in the materials that they release in the reports that have been released, you know, around the age-friendly initiative, around making sure that culturally and linguistically competent services are a part of the age-friendly initiative, because it's not just about, you know, making sure that seniors have access to Broadway tickets, et cetera, but to really say, well, what is culture for multicultural people? What do multicultural seniors enjoy doing? And making sure that those services are available for all of us.
One of the things that struck me, you mentioned providing lunch to seniors. That was something beyond Frank and Beans.
Right.
I would think seniors are not going to use a service, even if it's local, if it's not going to provide something as simple as the meals they're used to having.
Absolutely. And fortunately we do have programs like Meals on Wheels that deliver food to homebound seniors. But, you know, many senior service workers that I spoke to told me that very often the only human contact that a lot of seniors have, a lot of homebound seniors have, is with the person delivering their meals. And speaking of Meals on Wheels, I mean, a few years ago, the program was threatened, you know, because funding cuts were pushing the Department for the Aging towards providing the same food for everyone. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but frozen. So basically, after all these years of senior centers moving towards cultural competency and sensitivity to people's dietary needs, all of a sudden it was being thrown out the window because of funding cuts. So we need to ensure that this doesn't happen.
If you could give a message to the mayor, to our representatives in Washington, what's the key thing they need to know about immigrant seniors?
The first thing to know is that the population's growing. That, you know, the old stereotypes about seniors are that, you know, they are politically active, that they, you know, and mostly that, I mean, especially for elected officials, that they're politically active. And what we're seeing is that immigrant seniors, though they're a growing number, they're growing in number, they're yet not as politically active. And so it's very easy for their voice to sort of not be heard, especially at the federal level and among politicians. The important thing for them to know is that the face of aging is changing. I mean, it's like as just like the name of the report. I mean, this really is a new face to seniors now. And that face is going to be a lot more Latin American, a lot more Asian, a lot more African. It's really going to be very different. So our old assumptions about what seniors need, what kind of services they require, really needs to radically change. And that starts all the way from the top. It starts from the Older Americans Act. It's a very comprehensive piece of legislation. It provides nearly all the funding for all senior services that happen in the United States. Yet it needs to be reauthorized. And when it's reauthorized, it needs to have a lot more language that ensures that, that requires senior services to be culturally and linguistically competent. And that's crucial, because moving forward, there's going to be a lot more seniors who don't speak English. There's going to be a lot more seniors that have a culture different from what's mainstream in the United States.
We've got a mayoral race coming up in a couple of months. Are the candidates aware of this? Are they sensitive to it?
Well, it's I'm not going to endorse any one in particular, though. I mean, we were heartened to hear about Christine Quinn's plan to make many branch libraries across the country into quote unquote, you know, mini city halls. Because as it happens, libraries are a huge and a very important resource for older immigrants. If you go to any library in Flushing, for example, I mean, if you go to a library in Flushing or any other sort of immigrant-heavy community, you'll find mostly, I mean, at least in Flushing, Asian seniors sitting there socializing, reading the newspaper in their language. And, you know, so libraries are really increasingly an important resource. I mean, it's like, you know, seniors who might be afraid to go to a government office, for instance, to ask for services or ask for information, might instead go to a library. Mm. And libraries exist in every community in the city, and really they're not just repositories of books. They're really sort of human capital agencies. And they're of crucial importance to immigrant seniors. So it was great to hear that Christine Quinn's plan to, you know, put more funding and put more resources into these libraries so that they can continue to serve that role. They can continue to serve as information sources for the community. And by the way, as it happens, I mean, it's like that, Christine Quinn lifted that idea directly out of another report that CUF produced, which is called Branches of Opportunity, which is written by David Giles, a researcher here as well.
Well, then it's good to know she's listening and she's reading your material.
Yes, it's good. It's good to know. And we need more of that. We need to know that services need to reach immigrant seniors where they are.
Mm-hmm.
Because very often immigrant seniors won't know that there are services available to them, or if they do know about the services, they don't know that they're eligible for them. So really, services need to reach out to the seniors themselves where they are.
New York has always been a city of immigrants. That hasn't changed. What is different are the perceptions of aging and health based on culture and background. As the number of older immigrants continues to grow, the Center for an Urban Future report argues that much more needs to be done to make New York not only a great place for immigrants,
but a great place for immigrants to grow old. For Health Styles, I'm Liz Siegert.
That was Elizabeth Siegert, journalist and senior fellow at the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College, interviewing Christian Gonzalez-Rivera from the Center for an Urban Future about the new report, The New Face of New York Seniors. There are compelling reasons for all of us to be concerned about the health and well-being of those among us who are older adults, but particularly those who may be living in the shadows of our communities, often isolated, without adequate financial resources, and dependent upon others to survive. It behooves all of us to ask our older neighbors what help they need and to advocate for services that can provide some basic level of safe living for them. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of Health Styles. Health Styles is brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College. You can follow Liz Siegert and the Center on our blog at www.centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. That's centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. Thanks for tuning in and listening to Health Styles.